It's the final countdown.
Jonathan Charles.
And welcome to the show that's all about the warm, crackly sound of vinyl. We're travelling to Asia. We'll be right back.
been young and strong, but just a little too thin now. Maybe happy, but I haven't a clue to this life. In my mind, everything we could learn to fight like every good boy should. Seem to me we are blacked out in visions of China tonight. In my mind, stay with me. We could learn to fight like every good boy should. Cling to me. We are blacked out in visions of China tonight.
Two cracking tracks to kick off the programme. All of the music this week is linked to Asia. We heard Hits from Japan, the group, not the place, to get us underway. First it was Life in Tokyo, a top 30 UK hit from 1982, then Visions of China from 1981. As ever, we're sitting in the studio, surrounded by 7 and 12-inch records, real vinyl. And as usual, I'm joined by my son Max as we play and discuss a whole pile of hits. Max, what do you make of the very avant-garde pop group Japan?
So there's some things about their songs I do quite like, and then there's some things I'm not a big fan of.
So what do you like?
So I really like, on the second track,
Visions,
like,
of China.
Yeah, on Visions of China, there's just like a really great drum beat. But I'm not a big fan of a stop and start idea.
Yes, that's very odd, isn't it? Where it stops for a second and then carries on.
Yeah, and then same thing with Life in Tokyo. There's one thing I like and one thing I really don't. Like, I absolutely love the backing vocals in the chorus. That's just great. But then I really don't like the synthesizer. It's just annoying me.
Well, it's quite interesting because Life in Tokyo, that first track, was regarded as a very modern sounding song when it was first released. It was produced by the disco maestro Giorgio Moroder, the man behind Donna Summer and so many others. And that's why it's got so much electronic synthesizer. That was one of his trademarks.
Yeah. I mean, you can see it as well. I think the Moroder stuff I've looked at is the soundtrack to Scarface.
That's right, yeah, with a lot of electronic synth in that.
Yeah. But then I'm just not a big fan. It feels a bit fake.
Well, that song, Life in Tokyo, was first released in 1979, wasn't a hit. Then again in 1981, and wasn't a hit. They had to wait 3 years, until 1982, 3 years after releasing it first, to enter the charts.
It's weird, though. It's not particularly common that songs will just turn up after 3 years and go into the charts.
Very unusual indeed.
I mean, how many Do you know any other tracks that that's happened
to? I know a few, but it must be incredibly frustrating for the musical artist to record a song and it's not a hit, and then eventually 3 years on, finally, they make it.
Yeah, you say you know a few others. Give me some examples.
I'd have to have a think, but we've had a few on the show where there's been a very long pause. I mean, I think actually Pat Benatar, who we played recently, Hit Me With Your Best Shot, when it was first released, it didn't make it into the charts and had to wait quite a while, I think maybe a year or so, before it came back into the charts. So when you listen to Japan and lead singer David Sylvian, I think he's partially mimicking or challenging sort of David Bowie's style, partially Brian Ferry of Roxy Music. He's borrowing a lot from others.
I know, and I don't really like that. I hate the idea that to create a successful song, you have to steal ideas from other people and you can't be original.
Maybe imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
I hate it. if people started imitating me, I would...
And image-wise, actually, David Sylvian looked a bit like David Bowie at some times.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, clearly he just thinks he's such a big pop star, he's the next David Bowie. No, you're not.
So all the songs today are linked to Asia in one way or another. You've been there, to Singapore, to Hong Kong. I always think that Asia has a lot of energy. Maybe that inspires musicians to use that continent as an image.
I mean, it's been a while since we visited Asia, but I remember it just has this sort of like great feeling to it. Like there's so much character when you're walking around.
And there is a particular sort of sound you get in different Asian countries as well. If one thinks of Chinese-influenced countries, you get a lot of percussion sound, don't you? In Indian-influenced countries, you get a different sort of sound. So you do hear those local sounds, and maybe that also inspires songwriters.
Yeah, I think that inspiration is what makes people successful, though, in some ways.
One thinks of the sort of almost wind chime sound in China.
Yeah, well, I'm not a big fan of that sort of like wind chime idea.
Okay. Well, in an interview at the height of their success, the lead singer of Japan, David Sylvian, explained how the band got their name.
Well, it's the same situation that most bands find themselves in. You're offered your first gig and you realise you don't have a name for the band. Japan was pulled out of the hat. None of us really liked the name. We all thought, well, it'll do for one night, we'll change it later. And we never got around to changing it. We knew nothing about the country or the culture. It was really just an image, a vague image. It meant something different to each of us, I think.
Ever so long.
a record to conjure up images of India as we go on a musical tour around Asia, Monsoon and their top 20 hit from 1982, Ever So Lonely. Max, I really like that, both when it came out and listening to it today.
I didn't like it the first time I heard it about a minute ago, and I don't like it now.
Why not? I think it's really great.
I just don't really like the sitar. Like, it's an instrument that I just don't find pleasurable to listen to.
Really? There's a lot of Indian musical instrumentation in that song. You've got the sitar, as you say, which I think is really beautiful, actually. It produces a definite sound. You know exactly immediately that that is an Indian sound, and it's a sitar.
But it just doesn't have that sort of, like, beautiful, almost song-like ideas that I really like. All that sort of, like, very funky track, like, disco feel, which are the, I feel like, the two categories music should fall into instrumentally.
It makes it a very different sound, though, not a Western pop song sound.
Yeah, but I know I'm going to sound really snobbish because, and I'm not going to... No, don't cancel me. It's not that I dislike it because it's Indian. I dislike it because I don't find it enjoyable to listen to.
They also used, I think, clay pot drums on there. Different sound of drum sound.
Yeah, it sounded slightly creative. I actually didn't mind that bit.
Okay, so some bits you liked, some you didn't.
Yeah, it's sort of a bit of a mixed bag of a song for me.
Lead singer Sheila Chandra was only 16 when she recorded that. She'd just left school. Wonderful voice.
You know what she should have done?
What?
Stayed in school to 18, done music A level,
and not then done that record.
And then she would have made an even more beautiful track.
Don't you think she's got a good voice?
It's fine, but it's not sort of my cup of tea.
Can you imagine being 16, you know, you've just left school, and you're immediately going to the top of the pop charts?
Honestly, that would be my worst nightmare, because immediately I'd just become straight under the public eye.
Exactly, yeah, she was in the public eye, and that must have been pretty tough for her.
Yeah, well, I mean, I already am in the public eye, I'm just trying to avoid it as much as possible.
So she was pretty much a one-hit wonder, actually. She struggled after that to have anything as big again.
Did she have some sort of, like, breakdown halfway through her career?
No, she's still making music today.
Oh, wow. Using
Indian instrumentation as well.
That's not very one-hit wonder-like.
So Asia is our theme today, Max. Plenty of beauty on that continent to inspire songwriters. If you think of another part of Asia you've been to, Thailand, for example, it's pretty stunningly attractive, isn't it, with all those islands?
Yeah, I mean, we travelled to Phuket and Bangkok, and both were absolutely beautiful in completely different ways.
So I can see how people draw their inspiration. And even listening to that Sheila Chandra vocal there on Monsoon song, Ever So Lonely, you know, having travelled around India, it immediately makes me think of India with all of its dynamism, with so many people, of course, so much going on when you go through Indian cities.
I mean, India's a very vibrant country, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of activity there, and hustle and bustle, and you almost get that feel in that song. Now, Max, you're going to be back later in the show with more on one of our artists, but now it's time for a few upbeat records to get you on your feet, all on today's theme of Asia, all on vinyl.
It's the Vinyl Countdown. Disco action.
Fastest life.
What could be more Asian than this tribute to an oriental martial art? Kung Fu fighting seized the popular imagination in both Britain and America in 1974. It went to number one on both sides of the Atlantic, huge in discos. Although singer Carl Douglas wasn't from Asia, he was a Jamaican. This is Jonathan Charles. On the way, we've got David Bowie, Susie and the Banshees, Level 42, and many more, as we continue to explore music linked to Asia.
The best sound around.
It's the Vinyl Countdown.
With music just for you, Jonathan Charles.
China girl, I
written by Iggy Pop but recorded by David Bowie and produced by Nile Rodgers. What a pedigree. China Girl was a number two hit in the UK in 1983. And from a China girl to a Japanese boy, here's Anika. In the UK in August 1981, Japanese boy, Scottish folk singer Mary Sanderman changed her name to Anika for that song because she thought it sounded more Asian. She even wore a kimono on stage when performing. The length some stars will go to have a hit. And Max is going to be back shortly. That's right after the triple play. All linked to Asia, all on vinyl.
It's the Vinyl Countdown. 1978.
Yeah. 1984.
Leave the Western world behind.
1997.
The Vinyl Countdown Triple Play, all songs linked to Asia. First, it was Hong Kong Garden from Susie and the Banshees. Their debut new wave single, it's regarded as one of the best guitar tracks of all time. It reached number 7 in the UK charts. Then we have British band Level 42 with The Chinese Way, their first top 30 single in the UK. And finally, we fast-forwarded a few years for Corner Shop and A Brimful of Asher. Max, you're back with us in the studio. You've been finding out some more about that track and why it's connected to Asia.
Corner Shop were a British indie rock band formed in the West Midlands in the 1990s. The name originated from a stereotype of British Asians often owning corner shops. The song, Brimful of Asher, was their biggest hit and went to number one in Britain after being re-released in 1998. The record is based on the history of Bollywood film culture in India. It's a tribute to Asher Bosley, who is a singer who recorded over 12,000 songs for Bollywood films. In the lyrics of Brimful of Asher, they refer to her in Punjabi as Our Queen. When it was first released in 1997, it barely dented the chart, but it was a huge track after DJ Norman Cook, better known as Fatboy Slim, remixed it by speeding it up. He modulated the song to a higher key, halfway between a B-flat and a B, rather than an A. Dad, do you know what that means?
I can have a pretty good idea. I think it means it's a bit more high-pitched, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't know if I mentioned this, but I might have perfect pitch.
Yes, you have got perfect pitch as a musician.
And it's annoying me so much because, like, for halfway through B-flat and B, it's just, like, playing with every single one of my senses, and it's annoying me.
I have to say, as a non-musician, I think it's a really good song.
I quite like it. I feel like I would have preferred it in A, actually.
Corner Shop were one-hit wonders. That was all they really managed.
Really? Nothing else?
No, that was it. And it's all about those Bollywood songs, which are, you know, those Bollywood movies and Bollywood songs. Bollywood movies, by the way, are always full of song and dance numbers, aren't they?
I find it funny that on our trip to Asia today, we've seen so many more one-hit wonders than on most other shows.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, actually. I didn't really think of that. And maybe Asia is inspiring, but it doesn't inspire repetition.
Maybe you can only copy Asia once.
One critic said that Brimful of Asher sounds from the title as though it should be about smoking.
You know what? It's funny because it's true.
You know, you asked me earlier in the show whether I could think of an example where the musicians had to wait to be a hit. That's a good example, isn't it? It first came out in 1997. It was another year after Fatboy Slim, DJ Norman Cook, remixed it before it was a real hit. So, Max, were you inspired by all those Asia-themed songs today?
Yeah, I mean, maybe one day there will be some sort of Asia-themed one-hit wonder from me.
What would you call it?
I don't know. Brimful of Asia.
On the 45. So we've got one more track, Link to Asia, still to come.
But first, how about you follow us on Instagram and Twitter? On Instagram, we're at Vinyl Countdown Podcast, and on Twitter, we're at Vinyl Countdown 10, without the N.
Indeed. Now, let's play out with Alphaville, big in Japan, and big in the 1984 charts. That is pretty much it from us. See you next time with another box full of great records.
Bye.
The Vinyl Countdown.